Welcome to 33 Tangents, a roundtable discussion covering a wide variety of topics from digital analytics to working remotely to current happenings in business and technology. Your hosts, Jason Thompson, John Moran, Jen Koons, and myself, Jim Driscoll, all live in different areas of the world, but work together in the same company. Our regular day-to-day conversations often go off in various directions, and the goal of this podcast is to share our ideas and find new ways to engage with others. So we're good to go. How's everything going?
It's going great. Cool. Glad to join this time.
Yeah, we're glad to finally have you on. I think we have a good topic for this week. It's something we really haven't talked about, and it's one I wanted to do a series of them because I think you know there's multiple aspects to it, and it's around testing and personalization. There's several aspects, and I don't want to just use one episode to kind of encompass them all. Wanted to have ones that kind of take it through it. And today really focusing on getting a testing program underway, because not just with testing, but I mean, you know, in our space, we've seen it with lots of clients where, you know, they hear about something and then there's either this paralysis that they fall into because they don't know how to get started, or they've rushed things and they miss the fundamentals. So, and, you know, when we talk about testing in particular, you know, they hear about the, you know, all the benefits of testing and personalization can bring to the business, and they want to get something started, but they fail to get it off the ground, or this is not their first attempt and past attempts have failed. You know, they're super excited about what it can do, but because of that, they're focused on the sexy things about a testing and personalization program that come once it's up and running. They're not focused on the foundational pieces that are critical to do first to make sure that everything, you know, all of the glitzy stuff, the super sexy stuff I was just talking about is possible. So what I wanted to spend some time talking about today is with a testing and personalization program within an organization, what are the key first steps in setting that up? And then, you know, with that, what are the common missteps or misconceptions are there with, you know, that first phase of getting it off the ground?
Yeah, and I'm glad that we're using optimization as the example here, because, you know, it's a great kind of use case for this. But I think you're right, Jim, that it's kind of how do you get something started and establish like the discipline and the rigor it takes to actually run it successfully. And we see it the most with testing programs, because it's really exciting and really tempting to kind of think of, oh, we can test anything. We, you know, we've had so many ideas in the past few years. And now, you know, now we're going to be able to just kind of hit the ground running. And I think that the missing discipline to think what are the pieces that need to be in place are the ones that ultimately, you know, if you don't take the time to do that, ultimately, it kind of fizzles out after a while, because either tests are going to go out that are not very impactful, or that didn't have kind of the champion to push it forward and to do something about it. Or, you know, it's simply going to be kind of faulty outcome because there was no discipline to actually, you know, figure out how to evaluate if it was successful or not. So I think you're right. It's kind of, you know, maybe the kind of not so glitzy and exciting part of putting the foundation in place, but it makes all the difference. So I think that I would say the one thing that probably applies across the board is figuring out who's going to be involved, what, you know, and how. So, you know, a lot of the clients that I worked with, they got the technology for testing, and that's what triggered kind of the desire to start an optimization practice. But without taking consideration to who's going to be involved in that program, who's going to be the sponsor of some of these tests, you know, and who's going to design it, who's going to architect, who's going to build it. And they just kind of jumped in to figure it out. Maybe one person in the analytics team, or in the marketing group, just kind of jumps in and learns as they go who they can pull in to support them. But I think, you know, the one thing that works well is to kind of think, who is the kind of, do we have executive sponsorship to even run a testing program? You know, is it going to get priority when we want to build something to optimize the experience? Is someone going to help us get through, you know, maybe the pushback or the legal challenges or other groups not thinking it's a good idea? Who's going to help us, you know, kind of sponsor this program? And then, you know, who is going to make sure that we actually take action on it? Because if there is something that wins or, you know, gets good results, how do we make sure that we're actually in a position as, you know, wherever we are within the organization to push that live to the entire site or to the entire audience and to make those decisions? I don't think those decisions can be made within the execution group. The group that executes the tests is not able to, on their own, make those decisions. And I think an executive sponsor that's tied to the program is a critical part of it. The other pieces that usually are not fully taken into consideration is that to get traction, you want some sort of engagement with the different, with at least one person within the different business units. Because even if you're making one change in an area of the site or an area of the user experience, it always impacts other sections. So I think, you know, being able to interact with someone from each department and kind of at least tell them what's going on and pull them into the program is a good starting point to get some things going and get more momentum to meaningful tests. So I'll stop here for a second to see
That was a lot of words. If he lost a guest every week, I don't think I need to be on anymore. Like,
I'll just talk for the entire hour.
Just talk for an hour, and the rest of us will go.
If there's any questions, you know, you guys can like talk to each other on the next podcast or something. So
we'll have to have a follow up to summarize the podcast, but I think Hila brings up some good points, and it's fascinating timing, because I was talking to a marketing director this morning about this very topic. And I think it really does come down to ownership and setting that expectation up front and early. And when it's not, when there isn't clear expectations set, and when you don't have a group of representation across the different business units, that it tends to fail. And I'll give you two examples. And I think Hila brought up both of these. I'll just kind of show it in a slightly different way. So she mentioned kind of, we have this backlog of all these tests that we want to run. That's when ownership is typically given to a marketing organization, and they're super excited about it. And they have all these tests that they've talked about. And not that they're superficial, but they tend to fit within a certain bucket. We're going to test button colors. We're going to test wording on calls to action. We're going to maybe test some headlines and some hero images. And that's great. And I think that's a good initial first step. And the way that I like to describe it is, the initial phase of your testing program really should be like just free form play in a sandbox. Get all of that out, experiment, get people excited about it, but have a roadmap of where you want to go next. Otherwise, what happens is you get stuck in that sandbox, and there's only so much that you can build within that space. It begins to fizzle because you've kind of been there, done that. The ideas aren't really exciting anymore, and the program just tends to die. The second piece where I see companies struggle is when ownership is given directly to the technology team. And in that aspect, it becomes a bit different of a focus. The technology team wants to over-architect the hell out of it, which is great, but that should really be done over time as you mature in what your practice is and what you're trying to get out of the platform. But unfortunately, when the technology teams take full ownership, they tend to over-architect. They want to get everything perfect. They want to get every data source integrated into it. And by the time they're ready to test, everybody else has moved on. You know, that initial excitement around getting a platform, being able to test all these ideas, it's long gone. And now trying to get those people excited again and back in to support what you're trying to do is extremely difficult. So those are just kind of two examples of what I've seen or where I've seen companies struggle. And they both come down to the point that I believe Hilal was trying to make, that having ownership is important. And if you can't have ownership that helps bring the ideas and things that are important of a broad range of teams within your organization to the table, then that ownership needs to be elevated up to a position in the company that can do that.
Yep. I was going to say that that's kind of a big deal, kind of the, who, you know, the ownership and the different roles within the program. And more than that, you know, involving even people that are not in the program, making a conscious decision of who's going to be kind of pulled into the discussion. And one of the reasons that, and you were mentioning some testing programs that are put in either the hands of the analytics team or the technology team, the reason a lot of the times they don't get traction is because there's no real impact to the roles within the organizations that are actually, you know, the product managers and the marketing managers that are, you know, driving new features on the sites or new experiences on the site. It's done in isolation, and it might have a good impact in a small scale or in small use case, but how does it impact, you know, the strategy and the ecosystem of the rest of the organization? And I think that's kind of to open that up, it takes a more collaborative approach to the testing program and involving more people. That's when it starts kind of taking off a little bit more.
So, you know, with all of that and talking about ownership, and, you know, to Jason's point about sometimes it's sitting in the wrong place, what role do you think is perfect to be that primary owner or business champion for a testing and optimization program?
Well, I think that there's, so I'll talk about the roles first that I think should be involved. And it doesn't mean there's...
Perfect. That was my next question.
Yeah, I don't think there's necessarily four different people, but there's four roles that I think are critical here. And they, some of them could be done by the same person. So a sponsor, and typically that should be, you know, someone that is going to champion within an organization and prioritize, you know, testing and optimization within the organization. So, you know, maybe someone like a director or VP or something like that, that truly has a voice to champion the program. A test designer, I would say, and it's the person that kind of is going to go through the process of creating a valid test plan, a test plan that has an objective and a hypothesis, and that we're planning how we're going to measure the success. And, you know, do we have all the pieces? Do we have all the assets? Who do I need to work with? All of that. The designer of that test, you know, that will ask all the questions. Will this test be just, you know, in English or in other languages of the site? You know, is this, you know, how is, you know, what's the design of the test? And then a program manager, typically also kind of done by the same person, depending on where the program is. But a program manager is the one that makes sure that all the pieces are moving forward. And I'll get back to that in a moment. But the fourth role is the test architect. So that's traditionally kind of what you think of, like a developer that would basically build the test, the coding that goes into the testing platform, how it interacts with the applications, what needs to be pulled, you know, into the logic to decide if you're in the test or not in the test. You know, building the coding of the test is kind of the fourth role. And all of those roles need to be there. And going back to kind of like what I call the program manager, just making sure that everything is moving forward. So, you know, that this cadence to, you know, gathering information, prioritization of all of the tests, making sure, you know, even within a small program, making sure that the developers have what they need, that they're not just stopping because, you know, they're waiting for something, you know, making sure that the momentum is there with the sponsor of the test, whoever's requesting the test or whoever kind of built the test idea, and making sure things are moving forward. So I think that that is kind of the roles that make it successful. And if any of them are missing, then, you know, like I said, it could be one person that does multiple parts of this, but those roles are critical.
So let me ask you this to follow up on that. Which role do you see as most often missing from organizations, whether it's that they're simply overlooking the importance of that role, they don't know about that role, or maybe they do, but they can't find the right level of talent to fill that role?
I think that the program manager is usually missing, either because the business believes, oh, well, we're just starting. It's not really a huge, elaborate program. So, you know, that role is not really there, almost like a project manager to a certain degree or whatnot. So I think that's missing. And whoever is the developer ends up having to kind of feel that part herself or himself, you know, by, you know, reaching out directly to whoever came up with the test idea and saying, hey, you know, what about different languages? What about the copy? What about, you know, all, you know, what kind of audience should fit into here? Why, you know, and so forth. So it's, I think that's missing. Same thing with the test designer. So I think that, you know, the test designer in my mind is more than just taking an idea and adding it to a list of test ideas. It's, you know, thinking critically about what that test really is, what's going to happen in the experience, what's going to happen in use cases where they're taking, you know, the user is taking different steps to get there. What will happen in those scenarios, those anomalies, and you know, how will it look on mobile? Does it even apply to mobile? You know, all those things. And that's really the, you know, the biggest exercise that's missing, regardless of the roles. I think that's the biggest exercise that's missing from the testing programs that I've seen kind of suffering that need to be kind of rejuvenated.
So how do you get organizations to that point? Is it a matter of education? And maybe let's take a step backwards. Let's look at successful organizations. What are they doing? You mentioned, you know, we're immature, we're just starting, so we don't need all these roles. If you were to go back and analyze organizations that are doing it well, what decisions did they make up front? What things are important to have up front versus we may not have everything built or staffed up front, but we have a roadmap to get to that point. And maybe it's too loaded of a question, but we've been talking about a lot of the things that are missing. But from our experience, what things are positives we've seen from companies that are doing optimization really well?
Yeah. So, I mean, one thing that's slightly more strategic and one thing that's very tactical and very like low hanging fruit. So one thing is like to think of themes for your optimization program. So, some sites might have obviously, you know, purchase funnels or, you know, they have someone that owns merchandising the homepage with different promos and advertisements and so forth. And then they have another part of the organization that's really focused on lead gen and maximizing off of retention programs. So creating these kind of themes or swim lanes or whatnot, but, you know, certainly business themes for the testing program really helps a lot because it helps quickly identify who you're supposed to work with for each of these and start at kind of attaching actual real business use cases for optimizing the experience. So I think that's one thing to kind of, instead of taking a whole bunch of ideas that have built within an organization over time, you know, separating them into themes and kind of saying, okay, for the lead gen theme, you know, who do I work with and what kind of things do we believe that can move the needle here? Let's start focusing on those. So creating a little bit of focus by separation of the test, you know, test list or whatnot. But another thing that's a little bit more tactical, and I think that it's a great low-hanging fruit for any like program that's starting or that just wants to get better, is to create a better intake process. So when a test idea comes along, we call it a test idea and we say, okay, how do we turn that idea into an actual test plan? Not every idea is a test. And that exercise of thinking of what is the objective, what is the hypothesis, why do we think that doing this thing is going to make a difference, and then evaluating kind of, or going at least through some pre-evaluation of what we think the magnitude of this test might be, you know, how many people are going to see it, you know, if it's a very obscure location or if it's in the footer or if it's, you know, very specific to marketing campaigns, you know, let's evaluate how many people are even going to like be able to experience that test and revisit our test plan. And that exercise of the intake process, onboarding a test from just an idea to a true test plan, is absolutely transformative. Both for the success of executing a test as well as, you know, just helping business stakeholders kind of learn how to evaluate opportunity better, you know, by questioning, by starting to understand that we will ask all those questions, you know, as we're fleshing out the plan, you know, who's going to see it? How will it look on mobile? Give us mockups for all three experiences. You know, what will happen if they're in this other test and now they're getting into this? Do you want them to see both? You know, and pushing back and making sure that the plan actually makes sense and that the success metrics make sense. So just getting more clicks on the homepage here, I'm using obviously a very kind of elementary example, but you know, just getting more clicks on a hero might be a huge success for that stakeholder, but if it's not making any difference in terms of purchases, or if it's actually deteriorating purchases or conversion rate, you know, how is it a good thing? You know, it's not optimization at all. It's just creating superficial activities on the site. So I think that intake process of onboarding a test plan and pushing back and not just taking it and starting to build it, and playing that buffer between the test idea that come from the business owner to, you know, to the dev that's actually going to build a test, and slowing it down and saying, wait a minute, I'm not going to even have them look at it until we figure out if this is a good idea or not. So, so that's, I think, kind of an easy kind of, thing to start with.
Let me ask you this, because I see testing like, being able to balance a chair with multiple legs. And a lot of times we focus on maybe one or two of those legs. And one is obviously the technology portion of it. So how do we deploy the technology? How do we wire it up into our platform? That's one of the legs. The other leg is the testing ideation itself. And where do we, how do we design an ideation model so that we're covering the whole spectrum, and that's probably a whole subject that we can talk mm-hmm. about alone. Mm-hmm. But there are other legs of the chair that I think often go unnoticed, and those are more in kind of the softer areas. So I think that testing is a highly political subject, and we've probably seen that in many different companies where the test design, the test plan on paper looks phenomenal, but getting the buy-in from organizations and groups is more political than it is a rational mm-hmm. discussion. And there's also a kind of user project management side of it, where we have to properly set and manage expectations across executive sponsorship, across different groups. So how does that play into some of the recommendations and guidance that you give to your clients when it comes to running a successful program? Because I think, again, up front, it's very easy to focus on the ideation and the technology because they're right in your face. But how much of those softer pieces, you know, more kind of the political aspects and other aspects where we're trying to get buy-in come into play? And what do you do to help educate and guide your clients to be successful, recognizing all of those different legs that need to balance?
Yeah, and I think you touch on a good point that, like, you know, there has to be a buy-in. And I kind of mentioned at the beginning that there has to be kind of an executive sponsor that actually believes that, you know, testing and being informed by tests is kind of a viable path for the organization before they even approach it. But, you know, at the more granular level and working with different business units and, you know, they have different motivations behind what they're doing and they have different expectations from their role. I think that I find this magical thing that, you know, we always think like, oh, you know, this person suggested a test, we ran it and it totally bombed. It was like the opposite of what they thought. So now if I present the results, they're going to be like disgruntled as if I'm pointing out that they were wrong. And I think that as we approach a test, and that's why I think the exercise of building a test together with them is that kind of softer approach to getting to the same goal, which is, you know, to run successful tests and to run meaningful optimizations that are actually informed, is to help them and to, you know, feed them with data and information about what is happening on the site. Because a lot of the times, the ideas that come around are, you know, I don't want to say gut feel, but I think that they come around because, you know, someone within their role very focused for a long time on getting something going, and they have kind of their ideas of what could make it better. But it's not, they've never seen the data around the user experience that kind of say, yeah, it's working, or here's an opportunity. And I think arming them with that and providing them even a glimpse, you know. So I'll give an example. There was a test that came up that, you know, wanted to give additional details to the user around what they were about to purchase. And it was really valuable. But the test was positioned to expose that detail in a very kind of lower in the booking funnel, you know, lower on the page, so to speak, within the interaction. And it was unknown to whoever wrote that test idea. It was unknown to them that, you know, people don't even get to that area of the booking funnel or the interaction or the checkout funnel. So I think that arming them with that and just showing them, you know, a little bit more detail just between, you know, the analyst that's going to do the test results or the analyst that's helping driving the program, arm them with a view into it and just say, hey, you know, I'm noticing that, you know, no one goes to that area. So I think the magnitude of your impact is going to be small. Can we think of doing the same thing, but in a different area? You know, creating that same impact that you're looking for to give the details to the visitor, but in a different place. And I think that's what makes that kind of political tension within our organization a little bit better. If you work directly with the person who is spawning this and not, you know, not exposing them at the end when it didn't work. And it also helps everybody else. It kills tests that are not going to be fruitful. It saves dev time from being frustrated to build something that has elaborate logic and nothing came out of it. And, you know, they know. They end up finding out that they spent hours and hours building some cryptic logic that made no difference in the experience, you know. So I think that instead of waiting for the end where everybody's like clamming up and doesn't want to run tests anymore because they feel like, okay, I'll just push it to what I need it to be without a test, that happens typically because they feel, you know, like they're going to have to defend their idea at the end. So I think working with them directly to kind of arm them with visibility, you know, is kind of the, you know, a big deal.
Okay, so let me ask one more question, and then Hila, you can summarize. So, thinking about getting started, and one of the things that I see as a real challenge is that this is a technology that gets lots of groups excited, marketing, UX, development, executive sponsorship. There's so many groups that are excited about testing, and you mentioned kind of this structure, and I can't remember what you called the role that oversees it. I like the name, but I can't recall it. How do you balance everyone's excitement and want to participate with having someone run it and provide structure that will prove successful? Because I believe you're saying we should have all of these groups involved, but they need mm-hmm. structure. Yep. How do we structure that in a way that they feel they're involved, and that the person running the optimization effort, you know, is less of a gatekeeper and more of just a facilitator?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a great point, and it still applies to how to get a program going. I would say creating some sort of cadence for like a weekly call where you review the status of the different activities within the testing program. So what tests are going on, are live, what tests have concluded, what tests we're working on, and discussing prioritization, discussing any obstacles within the testing program, and involving everyone in that discussion, at least, you know, giving them an opportunity to ask questions. That's a great start. Another part of that weekly call, and it could be two separate calls depending on the size of the program and how much is going on, but that weekly call can also include sharing test results. So, I mean, that is the exciting part, that no matter what, everybody's going to get excited about. Even if the results are not so exciting, just talking about test results is great. So I think creating like a weekly call that no matter what, even if nothing has changed, you kind of go through the status of what is running, what we know, what we're working on, what we're building, showing some visual mockups if you have upcoming tests that, you know, you're about to deploy. I think it keeps everybody engaged and looking forward to kind of joining that call to see what's going on, especially if they have tests that they're involved in. But just to see what's going on is very exciting.
Okay, I like that. So Jim's given me the wrap up. So I think. So how would you wrap this up if people listening only took kind of one nugget of information away from this? What would you say that your number one recommendation is for getting started in a way that's going to give you the best opportunity to be successful in the long run?
Make sure that there's at least, you know, more than one person that's going to be involved in the program. So, you know, between a developer and a program manager, or, you know, someone who's going to design the test and, you know, whatever, and architect the test, you know, make sure that it's not just you tasked with it on an island, and that there's an executive sponsor that actually will help make sure that there's priority within the organization to do this. Otherwise, it's going to fall off really quickly. Secondly, find a clean way to for the intake process of test ideas. So even if you have a long list of test ideas that people kept adding to, figure out a process to transform those into actual test plans. So going and revisiting each one and, you know, crafting what the hypothesis, what the expected outcome is. What's the magnitude of the exposure of this test to actual people that are going to see it, and so forth. And finally, is the last piece we just kind of talked about, create a cadence no matter what. So even if not a lot is going on, you know, and you call the meeting early, but have a meeting every week where you involve and then you invite, you know, kind of a larger group that is the stakeholders, different, you know, folks from the different departments, and you share the status of what's going on, what is being prioritized, and share test results.
I like it.
before we wrap up, I had a follow-on conversation to Jason, your wrap-up question. So Hila, you were going through like the things to do that you're must-dos. Mm-hmm. Kind of want to just wrap up, you know, the follow-on question to that being, can you give like one thing that if you do this, you're doomed to failure?
Oh my gosh.
Like do not do this by any means.
Oh, you put her on the spot.
Seriously. I mean, I'm just looking for something super exciting to say, like, don't do this kind of thing. I would just say, I mean, not to say that it's like a bad thing to put the testing program in the hands of just kind of the architecture piece. You know, I would say a test that goes live just because somebody had the time to build it into the platform and to kick it live just as a proof of concept kind of thing. Those are not going to get much traction, and they're actually counterintuitive because, you know, people will then poke holes of how it worked and how it didn't work and mm-hmm. and how it didn't look right, or some people are going to freak out like, why is the website looking different all of a sudden, and you know, I didn't know of this. So without kind of like a little bit more support and planning, I think just doing little proofs of a test is, it kind of works against the success of the program to be adopted.
It does more harm than good.
Yeah, because it kind of then is that representative of how a test is going to go. It's going to be useless, mm-hmm. create no impact, or, you know, not that that's the case all the time, but, you know, there's a lot of challenges when you're trying to run a kind of a proof out test, you know, and it's just the developer trying to like figure out how it's going to work, and they're not completely connected to the different stakeholders. So it's, you know, some things are left behind and, you know, unaddressed. And I don't know. I just think that, you know, that's why I kind of simplified and I said, at least two people need to be involved here to kind of challenge each other to say, why are we doing this, or why are we doing it this way? So.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, that's an interesting perspective. That wasn't, you know, something that I was expecting to hear, but interesting nonetheless. Like that, you know, sometimes that, you know, a proof of concept is the way to go, but in this case, you know, it sounds like it actually do more harm than good. So it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. It's kind of the same thing as saying, like, don't put the testing program at the very infancy at the hands of like the technology team alone, because that's not fair. Okay. You know, that's not going to be useful to actually optimizing the experience. It's going to be whatever is in their realm to change or to do, or whatever they get time to do. That's what's going to happen. And I think it's usually not as impactful as it could be. Mm-hmm. So.
Jim, I think we might have a problem in that.
What might that be?
Well, I think Hila is a natural here, and she's going to be demanding more playing time on the podcast. So we're going to have to figure out how to fit that into our rotation.
I'll need to see the list of topics first. We'll see.
Well, we'll find ways to bring you back. And it's actually been a really fun conversation, and it's flown by. This is one that has moved really, really fast. You know, we kind of covered a lot very quickly, but you know, honestly, Jason, that's a good problem to have.
Agreed.
I'm excited. I often listen to you guys on the other episodes, and I try to interject and speak up, but you know, I do realize it's pre-recorded, but you know, I'm excited that I'm finally able to participate and take over. So
cool. Well, we appreciate you joining. It was a good conversation, and sounds like we have a follow-up coming in later to have another episode where we go a little deeper on running the program. So looking forward to that, but this was a good conversation and good topic, Jim.
Definitely. Yeah. I'm glad you're both able to join. Well, Hila, you know, it was great to have you on. We've got another follow-up conversation coming up in a couple of days, but you know, looking forward to chatting more, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. That was fun.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. We hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to reach us, you can do so by emailing podcast@33sticks.com or on the web at www.33sticks.com. The 33 Tangents podcast is a production of 33 Sticks.